Welcome to The Last Supper, your weekly podcast about art in Asia. I'm your host, Oscar Venhuis. Every weekend I sit down and release an episode bringing new perspectives and engaging dialogues with emerging and established artists, galleries, curators and collectors in Asia. Learn more about art in Asia with Christie's Education in-person and virtual art courses, gallery visits and webinars. Visit Christie's Education website and enter all in capital letters LASTSUPPER15 to enjoy a 15% discount. The website link and discount code for Christie's Education can also be found in the description of this podcast. Researcher Shi Yusu and director-curator Zoe Ye of the Honga Museum in Taipei talked about the upcoming Taiwan International Video Art Installation, also known as TIVA, that is opening on the 4th of November. We discussed the multiple narratives of this year's theme, Living Togetherness, and how they make art more inclusive. Welcome, Shiryu and Zoe, to the Last Supper podcast. And let's begin today's conversation by telling me, Shiryu, how you both know each other.
Yeah, I would say like the art circle in Taiwan is pretty small. So I knew Zoe like when she is like my former colleague's big sister.
Yeah.
Like,
I went to the same university with Bo Jun, and Bo Jun was working with Shi Yu at the Taipei Contemporary Art Center.
So when I was working with Bo Jun, Bo Jun talked a lot about Zoe, like how ambitious and determined Zoe is. And also like Frankie, she's the former director of Hanga Museum. Yeah, and she mentioned like Zoe working on like their Hanga's community-based project a lot. So yeah, and then like I went to see exhibition at Hanga Museum often, so that's why I knew Zoe.
Okay, let's talk about this year's Taiwan International Video Art Installation, or also known as the TIVA, which began in 2008. For those who have never heard of TIVA, can you describe, Zoe, what this video exhibition is all about?
Sure. I'm going to spend some time introducing this whole like Taiwan International Video Art Exhibition, because it actually initiated in 2008. And the museum itself, the museum that I'm working right now, the Honga Museum, was established in 1999. And our founder is actually a software engineer. He's a collector. He started this museum and would like to show new media arts and his collection. And we invited media artists to do their solo shows here. It was until 2008 that suggested by other artists or more senior professors from the university that we should have our signature biennial as a museum, as a fine art museum. So we initiate this video art exhibition in 2008. And every 2 years, we invited guest curators. For example, this year, we're going to work with Shi Yu, and we used to work with Jia Wei Xu, Feng Rui Xu, Eva Lin, Yu Wei. They're all quite established curators right now in Taiwan's art circle. And curators are going to set up the theme for the year, and we're going to set up the open call. For example, this year with the theme set up by Shi Yu and I, we received around like 500 entries for the open call. So it literally took us the whole week to finish all the videos. Yeah, it was very interesting and exciting process. We also include some invited artists for new projects. So the whole exhibition is composed by half the invited artists and the other half from the open call artists' works.
Yeah. And this project like actually kind of postponed 1 year because of COVID. So I got an invitation from Hanga Museum around the end of 2020, at the end of 2020. And then at that time, I still working at TCAC, and we were going to close our space. So it's quite hectic and busy at that time. And after the closure of TCAC, I went straight to a residency in New York, ISCP, and I spent like 4 to 5 months there. And during that 4 or 5 months there, like we haven't decided to postpone the exhibition yet. So we kind of online communicate and talking about kind of the initial idea about this exhibition. Because my residency at New York is research about the display of dinosaurs at Natural American History of Museum. And so at that time, I'm really interested in like how the natural knowledge was built and display and survey and display in the natural history museum context. So that's what I think about at that time. So in the beginning, like my thought about this exhibition is, but maybe we can do something about like other than human sensibilities, because I feel that art or like video work has the potential to convey or sense message that is unperceivable by humans. So that's kind of my initial thinking or my thought about this exhibition in the beginning. Then COVID, because like COVID situation in Taiwan is very different from the other places of the world. Like we kind of okay in 2021, but like there's like a several months kind of get a little bit like anxious in the whole country, but not many cases yet. But so some public space already still like closed the space or temporary halt what was going on at that time. So Hong Kong is the same. So after some discussion and with some like other exhibitions planning, so we kind of decided to postpone this exhibition for a year. So it happened this year. And during the, because of the postponed, like we are thinking about them, there might be some changes in the coming 1 year. So what we did at that time is like, I did some sort of like my presentation after my residency, also a close group reading group. And we read like many texts like together in a like close group reading group. And like we read texts from Donna Haraway, from Astrida Nemanis, from Anna Chin. So this text is sort of like shape what we are thinking. I think this scholar, I would say they are like feminist humanity scholars or new material feminist scholars. So like how they're thinking about materials and how they are thinking about bodies are influenced us, like Zoe and I and our assistant curator Jingxi influenced us a lot. So we're kind of gradually change our direction, because I feel like if we were just to thinking about how to use art to explore what the other, like maybe animals or other organics sensibility or their thinking, it's just too rude in a way, because like from this text, we know there's always some unknowability from other bodies, from other species. So I think gradually, and also I think COVID hit us really hard in like 2022. So at that time, I think it's like kind of the time we think about like how important care is. It's not only because of COVID, also because Taiwan has the lowest birth rate in the world. So yeah, like you will see like taking care of elderly is a big issue right now. So yeah, we're thinking about maybe care, like how to care each other's humans and each other, or that sometimes means like non-human or like animals or our environment. So yeah, like we gradually decided to use care as our curatorial theme to do the open call.
Zoe, you mentioned that you received around 500 submissions for this year's exhibition, and the theme of this year is living togetherness. Within this theme, do you mind talking more about the types of projects you received?
Actually, the applications, the amount is lesser than last edition of the video art exhibition. And I think that's also one of the reasons is because Shi Yu and I, we discuss a lot of what kind of work that we are trying to approach. So we actually designed or provide a lot of references during our open call. In the previous editions, usually when the curators set up the title and give a brief introduction or description about what kind of exhibition he or she wanted to make, then we receive a lot of videos, and they are not exactly relevant to the topic itself. But and it took us a lot of time to really filtering, or because you still want to watch them all, I mean, for all the applications. Yeah, but it really took a lot of time to go through all the works. And this time with Shi Yu, because we got one more year of thinking about the topic with all the like study groups, workshops, we actually already demonstrate what kind of focus that we are trying to approach. So I guess that is one of the reasons the work that we've received this year is actually lower than previous years. Yeah. But Shi Yu might want to talk about the whole process of like viewing all the applications. It's quite overwhelming experience still.
Yeah, like I kind of discussed this, not problem, but like this phenomena with my friends, like why this year my like the submission number is lower than the previous one. But I think one reason is that like when we start our open call at the end of 2022, like it's kind of the revival area of people traveling and go out to see exhibitions or making exhibitions. So I think the previous one, it happened during the like lockdown and or pre-lockdown like time, so that's why like artists just stuck at home and submit their works. And for this year's, I would say that I'm not that surprised, but still like many artists using AI to make their works. So yeah, like you see we saw a lot of like submission that using Midjourney or some generative AI visual tools to make their works. But yeah, like sometimes like we feel like it's not that relevant to like what we're trying to call for works. So yeah, like I think that's like one trend we think like that one trend we found out during all the submissions. But still, I think the other thing is that I think, yeah, people are getting more aware of so-called like the more than human care. Like we do see a lot of work talking about their environments and like how humans' activity interact with the environments. And many works actually talking about mining. I think mining in one way reflects like what's really booming during the COVID time. Like people use the computer to do like digital mining, like doing the NFT or cryptos. That's mining in a way. But also like mining is kind of the capitalism activity we've been doing for hundreds of years. So I think during the time of climate crisis, I would say, like people are more getting aware of like what's our impact and how I would say other entities are influenced by these kind of activities. So yeah, there are many works about mining. I think that's like one thing like surprised me.
So my follow-up question for you, Shiyu, is about the digital submissions, because I recall that 2021 was the peak of NFTs. Everyone was talking about this, but then within a year, that kind of completely disappeared, at least in Hong Kong. Because in Hong Kong today, I don't hear anyone talking or mentioning the NFT. What is the situation in Taipei?
Yeah, I would say I think also Zoe can add some to it because in this May, like one very active, I think there are more like a decentralized technical enthusiast group called Volume DAO. They have the NFT exhibition at Hanga Museum as well. And for me, I think I kind of still believe in all this kind of like decentralized technologies, but I think yeah, like it takes time. Like I do believe like people someday will still use NFT to make works or NFT can. I think in the museum administrative aspect, like NFT or decentralized technology can definitely help with collections or other ways of management. Yeah, but like right now, I think those who still believes in NFT or believes in decentralized technology, they're still doing some project on it in Taiwan, at least in Taiwan, because in Taiwan we have a nonprofit oriented DAO group. They're aiming for using this technology. Not NFT, just kind of one track of what they are doing, but they still believe in this technology can really change the way we live. So in Taiwan, there are still some groups that are working on this different technologies, and yeah.
It also reflects that everything in Hong Kong are really working in a very straightforward way. Because for people from no matter artists or investors, that once they find the NFT is not that profitable, they are going to just let it pass. On the other hand, in Taiwan's case, just like what she mentioned, there are still a lot of DAOs, different DAOs in Taiwan working on this technology, not exactly in art, but also some artists are still collecting or mint their works and share their works with artists from Southeast Asia or from Europe or other states from other countries. So in this May, the exhibition in Hongga Museum, for example, the artists from Taiwan, they actually invited artists from Ireland and from Cambodia and also from, I think they also participated in some exchange programs with digital artists from Japan. So for them, it's more like how to articulate all these creators with this new technology and using this new technology to approach the audiences that are not familiar with it yet. For example, I think we might be the very first exhibition in Taiwan showing NFT works to visually impaired audiences. Because during the exhibition, we also invite a group of visually impaired audiences, and we're trying to explain that what does it mean to make works by coding, and how does it relate it to the art forms that we are already familiar with. And we also host workshops after the exhibition tour, using more sensible materials to relevant intangible works. And I think that's actually quite interesting ideas of how to get people to be more familiar or know more about what exactly NFT is, because you got to know what exactly it is to know the value or to know the beautiful or to know how to, the aesthetic part of it.
Zoe, you mentioned the Tao, and if you don't mind, I'll explain very briefly what a Tao is for those who are unfamiliar with this term or have forgotten it, because it was in the news a lot, but then again, it disappeared. So Tao stands basically for a decentralized autonomous organization, which is a form of a legal structure, but has no central governing or controlling body. And the members of this organization share a common goal to act in the best interest of this entity. Okay, so let's go back to the submissions of this year, because these were projects that people had developed during COVID or just after the global pandemic. Within the theme of living togetherness, was this a subject that was addressed? And can you speak more about this, Zoe?
Before the pandemic, we happened to have one edition of Taiwan Video Art, Taiwan International Video Art Exhibition, and the title was called Offline Browsing. And it's talking about how the internet influences our words and how the games were used not only in leisure part of life, but also in education, in military, in different parts. And I think it's a very good reflection to that edition of TIVA in 2018, because at the time, people were still praising or embracing the possibility of how we can get connected without traveling physically. It's an option instead of like a obligation. But after the pandemic, the people started to feel that after this part of time that we experienced, that we need to see each other online, we need to connect with each other virtually, then suddenly people started to appreciate our environment and how the natural and how we can approach the physical environment freely. So it's a very interesting reverse that when you are able to travel without a concern of pandemic, you don't really feel the, you don't really appreciate it. Yeah. But after the pandemic, a lot of people started to rethink about that. Actually, during the lockdowns, we saw a lot of news that animals started to work on the cities, started to walk on the city, and the animals take back the space from human beings. This kind of news were everywhere. And it was until now that we started to realize that, yes, we're actually living with the same universe with a lot of non-human creatures. Yeah. So I think this is quite obvious and quite interesting. Not the phenomenon, but the opposite outcomes that I saw from these two very different editions of the video art exhibition.
I will also add some, because like I feel like we do see a lot of artists respond to like the experience of being locked down in their house or at a particular locations. And yeah, also some artists directly like reflect the experience of wearing masks and kind of intertwine with her like own personal experience of being at home with her families all the time. So we see a lot of work really like kind of grow out of the artist experience of being locked down. And yeah, like we also choose like one work that I think yeah more directly respond to this kind of experience of being locked down. And there's like one other thing that influence our curatorial decision is that we decide to still use like online exhibition after the pandemic. I think in Taiwan, because we only have a very short period of time of the public institution or public space being shut down, and people still kind of live their own lives. So I think our body experience is very different from what the people outside of Taiwan. And at that time, like all the public institution or museums trying to do online form of things, but I think they're doing it the way that just wanted kind of provide an extra accessible channel for people who cannot be there. They didn't really think about the UI UX experience of using online tools or online browsers to see or to experience an exhibition. So this time, like we still decide to choose like a second part of exhibition is like display online, and we collaborate with Distant Gallery, and they will we will collaborate. We will use their interface to present our online exhibition, and the work, like most of the work we choose to put online, are exclusively for online exhibition. Only like one or two works are at the same time they will be seen at a physical space.
Did I hear it correctly that there are two parts to this exhibition, a physical and a virtual one? Are these separate exhibitions or do they happen simultaneously?
Yes.
But I want to throw this question back to Oscar because you've come all the way with all the 80 episodes of your podcast. I think some of them were made during the pandemic, right? Do you see very big changes of people listening to podcasts before and after the pandemic?
The short answer to your question is actually yes. So after the pandemic, there was a noticeable difference or drop in listeners. Until I think the end of April this year, there was a steep increase in the numbers of podcast listeners. But from May onwards, there were about 50% less listeners compared with the month before. And this decrease continued for several months until August this year, where it started to increase again. So now the numbers are going back up. I would say there was a direct correlation between the end of the global pandemic and the amount of people listening to this podcast, but I assume also to other podcasts. So during May until August, Hong Kong was in fact really quiet because most people, I think, decided to go on holidays or travel abroad. And this is probably one of the reasons why Hong Kong was so quiet. But in Hong Kong, we never had a full lockdown. So certain businesses were always open or with limited opening times, and people continued to go to the office as well.
That's interesting. So in Hong Kong, it's not like when you have lockdown, it's rather soft lockdown, not a real lockdown. I see. Because we were forced to close for 2.5 months and really without any audiences. And right after the lockdown, a lot of audiences are still refrain themselves from going to the public space. So it was quite great, really slowly, step by step, then we have our audiences back.
There was a short period certain businesses had to close or adjust the opening times in Hong Kong, and there were many restrictions, such as, of course, compulsory mask wearing and the physical distancing. Opening times or openings at galleries were allowed for a certain period, but serving drinks, for example, was not. So, whereas some places in the world people weren't allowed to leave their home, in Hong Kong we had a partial lockdown. But let's return to the TIVA exhibition. What else can you tell Shuyu how you arranged the three narratives within the exhibition?
I think, yeah, like as Zoe mentioned before that, like when we did the open call, like we kind of share like three stories that we feel like we really respond to those three stories. So yeah, like that's kind of like three image of the three stories. Like one is Hakuto-dai, the one particular stone that is inhabited in Beitou area. And when during the Japanese colonial time, like people, the colonizer find it and like define it. And then afterwards, because of its radioactivity, like they were kind of deplete. And right now it's kind of the first national protection park for minerals in Taiwan. So we feel like it's a very good natural culture story that also kind of respond to the locality of Beitou. That's where Hunger Museum is. And the second story is about Denshousha. Denshousha is actually kind of a volunteer mechanism in Hiroshima Peace Museums. Those Denshoushas will like spend a very long time with the people who had experienced the A-bomb during World War II, and they will kind of keep down and write down and do a, like 3-4 year training of like keeping their story. And they will share these stories to the visitors who came to the museum. And we found this story very connected to us because like, even though right now we have all this kind of technology to do the archive or documentation, they still choose a very like embodied ways of keeping these memories and passing down these memories. So we are also aiming for looking this kind of like personal interaction that is not scalable, but still keep very important memories or important information from the others. And the third image is kind of TV, the television, because we feel like this is like a video art exhibition, and TV is kind of like the appliance that every house has. And also, I think at least during our childhood, kind of like spending time together in front of TV is kind of like the collective memory in Taiwan. And a lot of also TV shows, a lot of image kind of recycle from movies or from other like mass media's images. So we think like how we recycle, what kind of images is also the thing we want to explore, because it's kind of also an act of care about image. So yeah, like I think after the open call, when we during our selection, like this the kind of like the connectedness of the three stories gradually evolve into the title of the exhibition. And I think we in this like the whether physical or digital exhibition, we will still like trying to, I think togetherness is the thing we want to talk about. And togetherness can be talking about in a way of different temporalities, and togetherness can be a way of in togetherness in different spatial locations, also like togetherness in different materials or different matters. So yeah, I think yeah, in our exhibition we were trying to, I think basically most of the works we choose and we invited are like respond to the togetherness in different ways, and I think it's more than one category. Sometimes some words reflect to like yeah, togetherness in different times and different space, and togetherness in different materials or different times. Yeah, there are like I think every work is very multifaceted.
I have a small favor to ask that will make a big impact. The Last Supper is offered to you at zero cost. And if you like this show about art in Asia, give this podcast a star rating or subscribe to this podcast channel. Many thanks and let's continue. When I was looking at the Tivas exhibition website, which by the way is quite fascinating, and I will share the link in this podcast description as well. When you move the cursor over the screen, little parts of the image or illustration appear. Zoe, can you describe the image that is on the background on this website and how this illustration relates to the theme of living togetherness of this year?
Yeah, this time we work with an illustrator, also a graphic designer, in Zhen Chen. And she's actually quite good at her, like, as we can see, hand painting and handwriting. The first time, when we first approach her, she's like, she designed some, she was the designer for some other festivals or the CD jacket or like a book cover. But when we talk about the title of this year and about the three stories in the open call, she come up with this forest where we need to discover through the bubble that you scroll on the website to see what exactly is there. Because we, as she just mentioned, we were born at the same time with a lot of different things. One example is Hoctolite, is the mineral, but we have totally different sense of time. And we need to get to know more about our differences so as to build up the knowledge or to build up the our own understanding of this world. Yeah, and under this topic, under this concept, the designer come up with these forest-like illustrations, and we need to really scroll with our mouse on the website to see the details of where, what there is. Yeah.
And the current one, like, with kind of like sort of you see the cabinet of curiosities, like, yeah, like this imagery is also, yeah, like that's kind of goes back to in the very beginning of discussing about this exhibition, because I think Zoe and I are quite want to question the current knowledge system and how the knowledge system works, make like our lives being separate with others, like you can maintain your own individuality, but that's kind of a illusion because we definitely interact and interconnected and entangled with many, many other things. So yeah, like things like the, I think the in the beginning, the making of Cabinet of Curiosity is definitely the thing grow like born out of like colonial expedition and that kind of like dominate the things and like human beings have the urge to categorize everything to their own exact place and separate the connection with others. So we're trying to kind of create a cabinet of curiosity with like very strange and very weird things inside of each like small closet in the current visual of our exhibition. So yeah, I think yeah, some of the works we choose also respond to this, like kind of challenge the current knowledge system and how and why people try to build this kind of system in this way. And is there any other ways to learn or to get together with other matters and other things together?
It's a great subject, especially when we talk about proximity of togetherness, because on the one hand, physical distance has decreased with the introduction or invention of transport such as the car and aeroplanes, but also because of technology. I can video call, which we are doing right now, anyone on the planet. But this has also created a greater psychological distance between people. So loneliness and isolation has been on the rise for many decades.
We happen to include one work talking about a company for people with elderly during the pandemic. Was from an artist who was also a drawing teacher, drawing mentor during the pandemic to an elderly, to an old lady. And they, during all the drawing classes, they did the drawing class at the lady's house. And they talk about the items they're going to draw every day, but through that particular object that draw every day, they actually share a lot of lifestyles or thinkings, and to show that how that loneliness or the being solitude, the truth, the fact of like a being solitude could be creative or could be imaginative through the making arts or through the way of communication through art practices. Yeah, this is one of the cases that just come into my mind. But talking about Taipei or talking about the situation in Taiwan, I would say it might be very different from the city area to the rural area. Yeah, this is how I feel the difference is getting large for people who are living in different, in metropolitan or in the rural area. And I found that you feel more lonely or you feel more individual while you're actually living in the big city, living with with a lot of things happening every day. But on the other hand, if you are living in a rural area with more natural environment or with more accessibility to the natural, you actually feel less lonely. That's quite an interesting contrast that I just found out recently.
I think, maybe like not so directly with like inclusivity of elderlies, but yeah, like, because recently I also did a research, kind of like they are trying to like make a performance that include like deaf people and and also the normal people. I would say that's kind of weird to call it that way, but like how to include different, I think like the people right now, when we're talking about disabilities, there's like a spectrum and we just on the different places of the spectrum. And so Taiwan in 2016, the Ministry of Culture is trying to do a project that called Inclusive Art. I think that's kind of directly learned from what the UK did before. And there are some art institutions trying to do the program that include elderly into their like either like exhibition, or they making artworks together, or make the exhibition that aiming for elderly audiences. Yeah, and in Hong Kong Museum, I think like in the past, they also have the kind of special guide tour for elderly people as well.
I would say besides video art exhibition in general, every year we have like community projects or photography or paintings, and we exhibited exhibition from different forms of our works, but we all trying to approach the differently abled audiences. For example, the visually impaired audiences that we just mentioned. And this spring, we also invited some hearing impaired students to our exhibition. And of course, every time we need to set up different contents It could be the workshop, it could be a guided tour, and we need to design the contents especially for them. But every time when we work with different artists or performance, sometimes we work with performers when we are hosting workshops for visually impaired or hearing impaired audiences. And I found that actually we received more positive energies from the audiences than we expected. Because when we talk about the idea of inclusive, it's actually quite difficult to define the word inclusive itself. Just like Shiyu just mentions, we are all differently abled in a particularly in a particular spectrum. And even though, for example, even I said we host workshop for visually impaired audiences, but they are visually impaired in different degrees. Some can sense the light, some can see quite clearly just twisted images, but how they described the artworks, how they describe the sense of ours to us also open up our imagination to the work that I already see or the work that I already know. Yeah. So personally, I'm quite grateful or I quite enjoy this process of hosting events for our audiences with diff who are differently abled.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about the inclusiveness and how you are reaching out to a broader audience. Can you speak more about how this notion of inclusiveness has evolved at the Hongga Museum in Taipei?
We do it step by step. At the very beginning, we tried to invite more families to the museum. And then we started to host events for elderly. We work with the senior academies in the neighborhood. And gradually, we started to approach visually impaired audiences and so on and so on. And actually, in the future, I'm hoping that within coming years, we can host events for teenager queers or for, yeah, as I'm. Just like what I mean, there are more and more differences I can sense when I working on all these events, when I'm thinking about how audiences could be differentiated. Then we get to know more about different groups in our society. And yes, I like this project. So I think compared to previous stages or previous directors of the museum, we are working more on all these projects. But I can sense that it's getting more and more, not popular, but normal for institutes in Taiwan to include or to think a step more for different audiences. Yeah.
I'm intrigued by initiatives to develop exhibitions for an audience who experience the world in their own unique way, because the art world has and still is very much focused on a specific demographic of the population. When I was in Europe earlier this year, I did see a show that addressed colorblindness, and it was specifically developed to explain how people experience colors differently.
Did you enjoy it? I mean, the exhibition for colorblinded audiences.
Yes, what attracts me to a good show is that it has the ability to shift my perspective and how I experience the world. To look at art through a different lens and viewpoint is to me very powerful, especially the notion that synesthesia, which is when your brain processes sensory information through multiple unrelated senses, which is causing you to experience more than one sense simultaneously, For example, when you taste words or link in colors to numbers and letters, I find that extremely captivating.
I see. I can give an example. Like 3 years ago, when we were doing this video art exhibition in 2020, we worked with a visually impaired tour guide for our exhibition. I remember there was one work with old, with it was a work with 8 synchronized channel video work. And when our tour guide entered the room, he said at the very beginning that, oh, I can sense that there are many projectors here. And I was amazed at that. How do you know? I haven't started to explain it yet. And he told me that, yes, I can hear the sound of the projectors is much louder than the other rooms. And I can sense also in this particular room, it's hotter than the other rooms. It means that there are a lot of machines working in this room. And I was so amazed that yes, how our art admiring experience were dominant by our visual visions. And this is also quite inspiring experience to both of us. So we actually designed a lot of different senses in our coming exhibition this time. We also work with artists who is using flavors of fragrance. Yeah, using fragrance to show her work, or it's a video art exhibition, but we invited artists who there are some projects that invited audiences to wear different costumes during the watching experience. So we're through all this feedback from the different audiences, we're trying to enrich the viewing experience of this video exhibition.
Yeah, I would say for inclusive project, Hangar Museum is kind of like very, kind of one of the private museum that did this in the very early on. I think, yeah, even like the whole government trying to plan or push this type of project, Hangar Museum already start to did it to reach to different, yeah, ethnicity group or like age groups. So yeah, I think inclusiveness is definitely the thing that in our mind, but we also, it's a, like a sort of video biennial in 3 months. So there, we didn't have too much resources to do all different types of like inclusiveness project. I think that's like the thing. I think it's also kind of the thing all the museum or all the institutions need to think about, because like how many resources you are willingly to put into it and really like spend time, because like it's not just like one direction, oh, we are doing this. It takes time to really like get to know these different groups and know what their demand or what their need is. It's not just like, oh, we are providing this for you. I think it's kind of, we need this kind of mutual conversation to really help them, or not help them. Help is also kind of weird way to say it, but it's kind of really kind of do it together. I think like how to make things together is the thing we try a lot in this exhibition. I think in the very early on for the reading group, like it's kind of a sharing process. And then before the exhibition begins, this year we also have like 3, like also a prelude programs that invite the artists who are now my working on like video mediums, but their practice or their thinking is really respond to our theme of care. So we have like 3 sessions inviting artists like Yu Xiaobing, Wei Xinyan, and and some artists like working on making a map together. So yeah, like I think we are trying to make this exhibition more like a collaboratively process. It's like everyone in the curatorial team in Hangar Museum and every artist in this exhibition can put some thoughts inside. Yeah, that's like kind of the thing we are trying to working on.
And what more can you say about the dialogues and workshops you are planning across Taiwan for this Living Togetherness exhibition?
Yeah, like this year, like we have like traveling screening sessions. So for the works who are only online, like that will also be a part of traveling screening sessions. We will go to other cities like outside of Taipei, like Taichung, Jiayi, Kaohsiung, and Taidong. So we will do a screening of the online works and like sort of like a after screening talk and trying to introduce this exhibition and this video TIVA to the audience outside of Taipei. But also there's like a very special program that is like we will do a screening of Hong Kong artists in an independent store called Feidi, like Nowhere bookstore in Taipei, because this year we got a lot of submission from Hong Kong artists and many of them, I guess, like the current political situation is so different from 3 years ago. So many of the works really respond to their anxiety and their thinking about like how will Hong Kong become, or like what does it mean to identity of Hong Kong in this artist's mind? So we will have a special screening and choosing like about like 1 hour and 15 minutes long screening and invite some, because some of these artists are like currently based in Taipei, we will also invite them to have a like art after screening talk, talking about like why and talking about their making of these works and their artistic practice.
So you've seen a noticeable increase of submissions of artists from Hong Kong.
Yeah, that's true. Like
from the exhibition, we also receive way more applications from Hong Kong artists than previous years. That's why during the application, we think that we should react to it. Yeah, most of works are not included in the physical exhibition because the topic are not that relevant compared to other works. But we still invite them for this special screening, particularly because we think that we need to react to this phenomenon that a lot of artists are using videos or using like a method of making artworks to explain their anxiety to the forming of identity or the losing of the freedom of presentation. Yeah, it's more like from the exhibition's side how we want to react to this phenomenon. Yeah, and besides the special screening event and the tour screening event, there will also be tours outside of the museum in the Beitou area. We are going to invite audiences to the reading, walking, performing group, hosted by artist Esteline, Yijun Lin. She suggested that things we want to emphasize that museum is located in Beitou. So she suggested, why not we initiate a shooting program shooting project in the exhibition and inviting audiences to act as they're going to be assigned with a particular role. For example, you are the mineral, you are the trees, you are the deers in the mountain. And during the whole walking tour, there will be some sessions of acting as different roles to communicate with each other. Yeah, and there will be, each tour will take up to 8 hours, the whole day, basically. And we are going to host it every month during the exhibition. Yeah, so beside the screenings, there are a lot of different kind of workshops, tours underway.
Before we begin this recording, you mentioned the opening and closing dates of this year's TIVA exhibition in Taipei. But do you mind repeating that for the listeners who want to visit it?
The exhibition opens to the public on 4th of November in 2023 and last until 28th of January of 2024.
Well, I'm going to ask you both the last question of the Last Supper podcast. If you were to have your last meal, who would you invite, beside your family, of course, and what would your last discussion be about?
Okay, yeah. But before I answer these questions, I would like to mention that actually for this edition of TIVA, like we are like few works that respond to like, yeah, eating and cuisine and culinary culture in their own ways. I think, yeah, like I really like you choose like the Last Supper as the title of your podcast. I think, yeah, we're taking eating this activity so granted, and like we didn't realize like what does it like how important it actually could be. So yeah, like if I have to choose one. That just only one person. It has to be person. Is it has to be? Oh, great. yeah, that's. I'm not kind of. I'm Gemini. I cannot decide things in a minute. So maybe give me more like 30 seconds to think about it.
Yeah. Since Oscar already mentioned that besides my family, I immediately come up with the idea that I've been putting in my mind for a long time. In the exhibition, we're talking about how we are going to live with different species or with this whole environment that we were born at the same time. But I really, since I was young, wanted to know the aliens or the creatures from different spaces or different planets. So if I would have this chance at my last supper, I really want to meet people living in different planets.
Yeah, actually, like, my answer would be, like, really, I don't know if it makes sense in a way. Like, I would like to have dinner, actually, with the lady, host lady when the first time I came to Pongsonotau, because like this year we like with the making of this exhibition we took one artist like Jianjing Kaisen. She wanted to do a field research in Pongsonotau, and this trip didn't really turn into what she's going to exhibit in our exhibition, but yeah, this experience is quite different. It's also because it's my first time. Like I took her, it's my second time, but like first time when I visit Pongsonotau, like, yeah, like I kind of have a very shocking experience because like it's like there all the time, and yeah, like we heard about like the nuclear waste protest, this kind of things, but we never like at least for me, I never been there. So yeah, when I physically arrived there, I think the whole culture and the beauty of Pongsonotau like really gave me a huge shock. And yeah, like the lady there, she built a greenhouse, and And there's like a huge typhoon last 2 weeks ago, and her house is kind of wholly destroyed. And but she's safe, so she's decided like to reconstruct the building or that. And yeah, like I read some, also because right now even the whole island didn't really got its electricity back. So I just learned the news from her time to time. And yeah, I really want to sit down with her and talking with her. And yeah, want to hear like her experience of this like natural after this. Also, I think it's like semi-natural disaster, semi-human-made disasters.
Many thanks to you and Zoe for talking with me today, and all the best with your opening of Tiva.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of The Last Supper with researcher Shiyu Su and Zoe Ye, the director and curator of the Hongga Museum in Taipei. If you like this show about art in Asia, you can support us by giving this episode a star rating and subscribing to this podcast. If you have any questions, suggestions, or wish to participate in this podcast, you can contact me on oscar@thelastsupper.asia. You can visit my website www.thelastsupper.asia as well, or contact me direct on Instagram @thelastsupper.asia.